Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! Like two flamingos in a fruit fight! Every color of day, whirling around at night.
Well, there goes the Daverhood. Welcome, everybody, to Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk radio, music, interviews, and more, heard every Sunday night at 11 on this station, AM 1240 WGBB in Freeport, New York. Also, you can hear vintage episodes of the show, which is just code word for repeats, but you can hear them on the internet Thursday nights at 8 and 11 on the Live365.com channel DFSX Radio. And we're making some moves and hoping to get on some other places as well. So keep it tuned here. And tonight, going to be a little bit of a different kind of a show than usual. Although every week we try to do some different things. But kind of a Dave Goes Away sort of show, because I just went away. I'm back. Feels good to be back. I was only away for about 48 hours, but I want to tell you all about where I went and what I did, because I was lucky enough and happy enough to spend a night or two in Baltimore. Yes, I know. Make your jokes now. I'll make a few later on. But, yeah, I haven't been to Baltimore since a good 15 or 20 years ago. And first time I went there, a friend was living there, and he has since moved to a bunch of other places. And it's so sad for him because he really only likes New York. He needs a big city. And he was born in Brooklyn, raised there. We went to school together. I mean, I'm talking elementary school. And so I came out there to see him for a few days, and I was really excited the first time I went because I had not traveled very much at that point. And it was exciting to see another city, even if it was smaller than what I was used to, having been also from Brooklyn and New York City. So I came out to Baltimore about 20 years ago, and he had been living there for a couple of months because he moved there for his job, and he just loathed it. He was so bored. Now understand, he was there in the days when Inner Harbor was just being put together and built. You know, it wasn't this big mini mall I'll be telling you about later on. It was the beginnings of the reclamation of downtown Baltimore. All it was at that point was a couple of little nice places and the rest, a lot of urban blight, and the rest just pure sort of suburbia and outer Maryland. So he gave me a very skewed vision of what Baltimore was, or maybe that's what it was then. But he was also jaded just from being there and not the place he really wanted to be, which was back in Manhattan. And then he ended up moving off to Iowa. It was either Iowa or Idaho. I don't recall at the moment, but they are interchangeable, aren't they? And he was in Chicago, which was a bit better for him. And now he's in Jersey. So eventually he's going to crawl his way, God willing, back to the big city. But I was in a small city, as I said, this past weekend, seeing Baltimore for the first time in a very long time, and have some pretty nice things to say about it, some fun things to say and to share that I learned while I was there, because we walked around, and we went to Inner Harbor, and we took a tour, and, you know, we'll share little tidbits that you may or may not know about the town of Baltimore, all on this episode of Dave's Gone By. Going to play a little bit of Baltimore-ish music, too. You don't get that many Baltimore songs, you know, as opposed to, say, New York, New York State of Mind, I happen to like New York, or Paris. You know, Paris by the Window, the last time I saw Paris, Gay Paris. But Baltimore, A, the sound of the word doesn't quite have the lilt of Paris or Chicago. No, Baltimore's like Baltimore. Baltimore, it rhymes with a lot of things, the or part. Baltimore, whore, snore, gore. But, well, maybe that's the reason they don't use it so much in song. But yeah, I found a couple that might be appropriate. Also, musically speaking, we're going to pay a very quick tribute to someone that I only knew from one song, but that song kind of captured my imagination, a singer and guitar player, much more of a guitar player than a singer, that's for sure, named Nicky Sudden, and he rather suddenly died a few days ago. He was only, I think he was about 49 years old. I'll check on that before the show's over. Real surprise, real shock. I mean, he was doing concerts and radio interviews 24 hours earlier, and didn't seem like a guy at this age already to be a drug casualty or anything like that. So I think they're still finding out or figuring out what took the life of Nicky Sudden, or if it was just natural causes. But anyway, one song I will play for you of his, and there's others I can guide you to on the internet. So we'll pay tribute a little bit to Nicky Sudden later in the show. And what else are we going to do? Well, part of the Baltimore thing, also I'll talk about the last play that August Wilson wrote. And the good part is, you know, he was working on that 10-play cycle of plays set in mostly in Pittsburgh of the black experience in America. And what he was doing was he would take one decade each of the 20th century and set one of the plays there. So by the time he was through, he would have 10 plays, one for each decade, representing the black experience. And many of the plays are really fine. A couple are masterpieces, and he finished the new one, which was set in the 90s, basically just as he was dying of cancer. And he did finish it, and it's pretty darn good. And I'll tell you about Radio Golf also later in the show. So we should get to it, but first, gotta remind you about our sponsors who make this show happen. There's Hewlett Minuteman Press, those wonderful copy people. MortgagesRock.com. It's not just if you want to get a mortgage or borrow some money. It's where you learn to help other people who want to get mortgage money, who need money to fix up the house or send the kid to college. You do some of the paperwork. You tell them what to do. You bring the client in, and you get a nice chunk of the commission. MortgagesRock.com. They're licensed in New York State and a bunch of other states. Discount Funding Associates runs them and runs them very well. I can see their office when I pass, you know, towards the train station pretty much every day. And it started out as a couple of desks and one little office there and a few people in it. And now it's humming all the time. There's a dozen people running around answering phones, checking on the computers, helping people get their funding, helping you become a mortgage broker. So please check out MortgagesRock.com. And then there's Performing Arts Insider, the theater magazine, the Bible of the industry, everything you need to know about Broadway, off-Broadway, cabaret, opera, and dance. Performing Arts Insider. Find out more about them at PerformingArtsInsider.com. Well, I think that about wraps it up for the sponsors. Now I'm just going to get to Baltimore, but I'll do it after these messages.
Hey, baby. For a good time, don't call me. Read Dave Lefkowitz's book, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World. It's got all these funny comedies in it, and they make you laugh, they make you think, they make you, ooh. Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World. 516-295-1511. Or email davesgoneby@aol.com. If you like Dave on the air, you'll love him between the covers.
Hi, this is Dave Lefkowitz of Dave's Gone By, reminding you to tune in every Thursday night at 8 and 11 Eastern Time for the best of Dave's Gone By on Live365.com and the special channel DFSX Radio. All you gotta do is go to my website, davesgoneby.org, click on the link, and you can hear a classic episode of Dave's Gone By every Thursday night, 8 and 11. Go to DFSXradio.com for more of me.
Beat up little seagull on a marble step, trying to find an ocean, looking everywhere. Hard times in the city,
From the Little Criminals collection, Oh, Baltimore, Man, It's Hard. And maybe it is. Maybe Baltimore is a tough place for a lot of people. But I got to see the good, happy, positive side of Baltimore. And first of all, I know I'm mispronouncing it. Or if I were living there, I would be. Because Outsiders, it's Baltimore. From Lord Baltimore, whoever he was. But the inner people, the Inner Harbor people, people who've lived there for a while, they drawl it. They kind of go, Balmer, Balmer. And you do hear that a bit from the locals. I guess that's the way of making it theirs. But can't really do that with New York. Maybe we can. We can go, New York. We're from New York. New Yorkers. You can even take the U part of New and just jam them together with an apostrophe. New York. But it's more fun to say Balmer. And that's where I was. Balmer, Maryland. And again, I know there are certain parts of town that are not very nice to be, and that there's certainly a poverty and various problems with it. But, you know, I needed a little bit of a vacation and was kindly invited to check out a show playing at Center Stage, which is Baltimore's, I guess, premier theater that, as opposed to the touring theater. And I'll tell you more about Center Stage in a bit, because I want to talk about the show they were doing there, which is August Wilson's last play, called Radio Golf. But getting a little bit ahead of myself. Anyway, the promo people for Center Stage invited me and my wife Joyce down to Baltimore just for a day or two to get a sense of the place and a sense of the theater, and we're very happy to do that. So here's just my quick weekend. This is, hope I'll say some interesting and entertaining things about where I was and what I did, or if you're looking for a reason to go to Baltimore, and I guess people do need a reason to go to Baltimore, I might give you a few. So if you're travel-oriented, this might be the episode of Dave's Gone By for you. Anyway, we stayed in the Tremont Plaza Hotel. Nice little hotel. That's one of those all-suite inns, and I'm not talking terribly fancy, but it's kind of neat. Like, pretty much every room, I believe, isn't just a room. You've got, like, the bedroom and the sort of living room sitting area, little kitchen area and bathroom. And it is kind of nice, although, because it's a suite, it's weird walking in and seeing a conference table in your hotel room with all these chairs around it. Sort of odd. It makes you feel like you should be working. Like you should be calling up a bunch of business people and brainstorming some idea, even if you're on vacation. Just because seeing that big old table in a place that you're there just to rest and mellow out. But it is kind of nice at the same time being able to have one place where there's like a couch and a TV and a bathroom off to the side. And not just one room, like those small little rooms that mostly you do get when you're traveling, where you can see from the bed both the bathroom and the front door, and you know, the door to the room next door, and across the way to the other hotel peeking out at you. So, nice place. Tremont Plaza Hotel. Oh, and the other thing I wanted to mention about that is that they didn't have a mini bar, which was great. They had a fridge. And I mention this because the New York Times did a story about this about 2 weeks ago, where they're saying that more and more hotels of all different levels and scales are replacing mini bars with refrigerators because people are just not into them. And finally, after all these years, hotels have learned that it's just not worth it, that people get PO'd by opening a fridge and seeing that a jar of nuts is $8 and a candy bar is $3.50 and a bottle of water is $3.50. One of the nice things is they actually gave us complimentary bottles of water at the hotel. And it shows you where we are in our thinking in 2006 America, how far we've come where I can actually be impressed and excited and grateful to get free water. Water always used to be free. You'd put on a tap, you'd fill up a glass, it was like, whoa, the water's free. And then some genius started putting it in a bottle, and rather than selling it for 10 cents or 2 cents, the way seltzer used to be, you know, you'd have these big bottles of Spritz. What is seltzer? It's water with carbon in it, or carbonation, whatever they do with salt. But no. You know, if you find a bottle of water in the supermarket on sale for 50 cents or 75 cents, you're excited. It's like, oh, great, you'll grab it, because it's not $1.50. So getting bottled free water in the hotel is really exciting, you know? But the other exciting part, truly, for me, is being able to have an actual fridge, because I got so sick of going to these places. I am not going to go into a mini bar, no matter how peckish I am. I would rather walk half a mile to a Duane Reade or a CVS or to a local grocery store. There's a gouging element involved. I mean, there always is, even with room service. But imagine parents who come to these hotel rooms with kids, and, you know, they open up the fridge, and the kids are going, "Ooh, Mommy, I want that. I want the dollar bar. I want the, you know, the Three Musketeers. I want the juice, and I want this." And the parents have to suddenly start saying, "Oh, well, no, we'll get you. We'll go." And the kids are, but it's right there. And have you explained to kids that Mommy and Daddy don't want to pay $25 to feed three kids a couple of snacks? Well, they don't have to anymore. And the hotels have finally caught on that the checking and the going through that the maids have to do of the mini bars was costing them more money than they were making gouging people from the food inside it. Because, you know, the maids have to go in there and check that everything's in its place, and if something's gone, they have to note it down. It isn't an honor system. It's like not like the person staying in the hotel writes and keeps a log saying, "Yes, I had one pecan bar and I took a bottle of tomato juice for this much money." No, it's up to the maids to physically go in there, see what's been moved around, and they have to replace it. And it was costing time in money, or money in time, for them to do all that. And remember, it really ticked me off last time I was in a hotel about a year ago, I think, when they had a mini bar, and I was used to grabbing some of my own stuff, putting it in the mini bar because it's a fridge, and not touching the other stuff and just eating what I had bought and brought. And this bar said, and maybe they're lying, maybe it was just a sign, but it said, "There's a sensor in these things. If you move anything, you bought it, you pay for it, you ate it." So I couldn't even put anything in the fridge for fear of moving a bottle somewhere that I would eventually be charged for. So that really, if they're getting away from that, I think that's wonderful. And boy, I'm getting away from the trip to Baltimore, aren't I? Away from the hotel, into actual Baltimore proper, and we went down to Inner Harbor. And that's really the place. That is, it's like if you're a Long Islander and you know Valley Stream, what do they say about Valley Stream? Oh, yeah, that's where the mall is. That's where the shopping center is. And Inner Harbor is kind of a shopping center, except it happens to have this gorgeous, big, old, watery harbor there with boats going on. And my first welcome to the city was walking along the harbor with my wife and then suddenly hearing bang! And I immediately started ducking and said a word I can't say on the radio. "I'm here 2 minutes and somebody's been shot." Well, of course, you know, my wife points, and she shows that there's a ship in the harbor, and that every noon or a little bit afterwards, they powder the gun and they fire the gun. And I was like, "God damn, don't do that. You know, you're going to give people a heart." I'm 42 years old. Imagine some 80-year-old walking along for a nice vacation going down for a stroll by the water, maybe grabbing a bagel somewhere, having a sit down to read his newspaper, and then, you know, all the noonday comes and bang! He'll be collecting dead bodies off the harbor. But it is actually quite a nice area, like a mini mall version of Mystic, Connecticut. We went first to the visitor center, and you got to be careful at visitor centers because you're always going to, either you go in there, you get your map, you get a couple of brochures, and you go, and you're out of there in 2 minutes, or you're going to get the old, old person who is going to really, really want to help you, and that means you're stuck for half an hour. And it's the old guy, the old Sakrachana who goes up, or the woman, and is like, oh, so how long are you in town? So, are you going to be eating here? Do you want a museum? And so, yeah, that happened to us. This must have been in his late 70s, mid-80s even. Old Jerry, very friendly fella. And if you even suggest that you might want to see an attraction, that you might be a little bit hungry. So it's like, oh, let me tell you about that. Oh, we have the brochures over here. Oh, and, you know, the minutes are ticking away. And yet, good old Jerry was very helpful. He convinced us to take the tour, which I'm very glad we did. He also recommended a restaurant that we wanted to go to, but we ended up being out of the area. So my apologies if that, you know, a reservation that we didn't end up making. But the tour was pretty neat. And basically because, A, you get to see Baltimore, and which is a fairly contained and small area, kind of a city. That's what I was surprised at. I mean, we get on this bus, the whole tour was about 85 minutes long, and we must have passed around in kind of a circle three or four times. I mean, we would end up 20 minutes later, two blocks from a place we started in, you know, and then again 20 minutes further down, we'd be three blocks north of it. First thing that they pointed out was that one section of the city has something called painted screens, where people, just, you know, in the middle of a hot, miserable summer, I guess before there was air conditioning all over the place, to make themselves feel cooler and to beautify the area, people would paint these nature scenes and all these different things on their screens, on these row houses. And you got to understand also that these row houses are so narrow and literally one on top of the other. I'm not saying that there's maybe a few feet of grass in between them. I'm saying they're wall to wall to wall. And the really astonishing part was some of them, they weren't even deep. They would go maybe 20 feet back from the front of the building to the end of the building, and that was the place that was where they lived. Sailors, I was going to say seamen, but there'll be a joke about that later on, I'm sure. And where they would just stay and live, but I guess they were on the water so much they didn't need a big place. So they could have this little tiny narrow thing that was, you know, three blocks from the harbor, and that's where they would live. Where else do we go? So the bus goes a little further, and I did not know this, but the first Civil War deaths by bloodshed were in Baltimore, and it wasn't a big old battle there. It was this almost riot kind of thing, the Baltimore riot, where the Union militia was marching from a fort about a mile down the road, and Maryland had a lot of strong Confederate sympathizers. So they started rioting. They started throwing rocks and doing other nasty things towards the soldiers. Soldiers, being soldiers, started firing. And then, you know, the civilians got their guns, too. And at the end of it, you had four dead Union militia and 12 civilians. And again, that was the first real casualty of the war, although I was told by Tom Ross, our wonderful program director and engineer at WGBB, when I was telling him about this, he reminded me that the first Civil War death was actually by accident on the Union side. There was some guy who, I think, pointed a cannon at his own face accidentally, and then, you know, nothing good can come of that. What else did we discover? We were told that Betsy Ross and all that flag stuff was done in Baltimore, and the fact, and this is what I love, you get these right-wing Republican, these senators, these middle-aged, semi-rich white men making these big deals about the flag and patriotism and what the flag means and then how it's American, it's un-American to do this to the flag or that to the flag. And the flag that Francis Scott Key was looking at and was thinking about when he wrote the Star-Spangled Banner, which wasn't even called that when he wrote it as a poem, but it was a flag that was being sewn on the floor, big old, big flag, on the floor of a brewery, which I think is pretty wonderful. The fact that people were just spilling beer and, you know, don't step on the flag, Clem. Don't step on the star. That's what it was. You know, they were knitting the damn thing on the bottom of a beer hall. So I think that isn't unpatriotic. I think that's pretty wonderful, the fact that we have this wonderful, meaningful symbol of our nation, but it really came from the floor, from the people, from the blood and the guts and the being a bar, vomit and urine of folks, and then to graft all this hypocritical and all this rhetoric onto it, like the flag, when, you know, the real meaning of a flag is internal for each and every one of us. Okay, enough politicizing. What else did we do? Well, Edgar Allan Poe's grave, or his second grave, actually. He was moved so he could be with his family in the little corner, front corner area. You can't really miss it on the edge of the block. Poor guy. You know, he died at age 40 after years of drugs and drinking, which did not help the pneumonia that killed him. And plus, he was still grieving over the death of his wife, whom he married when she was 13. Again, how times change. Here we have this poor school teacher. Well, not poor necessarily, who ducked jail time, but she was sleeping with a 14-year-old student, and everybody's calling her terrible names and a harlot, and why isn't she getting prison time, while Mary Kay Letourneau had to do this jail time for her boyfriend. And meanwhile, here's Edgar Allan, happily married to a 13-year-old. Unfortunately, well, you know, maybe God punished them because she died fairly, she died very young. But I believe she did hit puberty by the time of her death. Anyway, who else? Going from death to birth, Babe Ruth was born in Baltimore. I didn't realize that he had started as a pitcher, and later, with his gay friends, he became a catcher. No, but seriously. And he started there, and one of the other cool things that they showed us was a police station that was used for the TV show Homicide, one of really the best crime shows ever on television. I wish they'd start repeating it, because it was real good. And set in Baltimore, and really got, like, the taste of the city. But the tour guide told us that one interesting thing, fun thing that the locals tend to do, is if someone needs a cop for something or has had a crime committed, they'll send them to the Baltimore place where it says Homicide on the front, police station. And, you know, it's a big old happy funny gag because it isn't actually a working police station at all. It's just the frontispiece and the place where they shot Homicide on TV. It's a set. And, boy, you have to figure that's a cruel streak in Baltimore. I guess Baltimoreans would be the appropriate word for them, to send people who really need a policeman, you know. Yeah, I sent them to the set. Wait till they'll try and open the door. Ha! I don't get it. What else did I learn about? Oh, yeah! When we got there, we saw all these trees just starting to bloom. And since Baltimore is so close to Washington, D.C., we assumed that they were cherry blossoms. But they're not. We were told that they're actually ginkgo trees. They're also white, and they also have these petal things, and they fall down, and they're real pretty. But they're not cherry blossoms. They don't grow cherries. They're ginkgo trees. And a cab driver told us the little unpleasant secret about ginkgo trees is that they should be called stinko trees, because when they fall down, the little inner things in them really smell horrible. Schooling was telling us that when he was a kid, he picked them up and smelled them, and he would call them funk balls. Funk balls. I love that. So if you go to Baltimore in a few weeks, I guess, after the season for the ginkgo trees passes, and you start poking around at all these white things on the and start smelling them, you will be playing with funk balls. Wow. What else? Yes, there's a tower in Baltimore. Now, this is also way cool. It also shows you about America. It's this majestic, old, kind of Englishy-looking tower with a clock on it, and it really gives a whole nice feel to the city of old times. And if you look closely at the face of the clock on the tower, What do you see? Not a pretty picture of a moon. You know, not this beautiful street scene, not night and stars. No. You see the word bromo-seltzer typed out all along the front of it. So even gazing at old-timey skylines and streetscapes and landscapes, you get the commerce of America. Well, I've got more to say about Baltimore and August Wilson, and I'll do that right after this.
Ah, fine wine, great books, priceless antiques. All that's missing is something to listen to. But of course, episodes of Dave's Gone By, the music, the comedy, the perceptive talk, entire shows preserved on compact disc, any episode you choose, just $12, shipping included. No home is complete without Dave's Gone By on CD. So visit davesgoneby.org because you're worth it. Print it, copy it, send it as a gift. All that and more at Unit Minuteman Press, your full-service printer, family-owned and operated since 1975. Photocopying, printing, wedding invitations, engraved gifts, Minuteman, 1315 Broadway in Hewlett. Call 516-569-5577, 569-5577. On the web at unitminutemanpress.com. Mention Dave's Gone By and get 10% off.
When my wife and I were there last weekend, and we were kind of happy about that. It was the beginning of that spring weather, and as I said earlier, the ginkgo trees were out in bloom, but not quite stinking. So it was a really perfect time to go walking around Inner Harbor. And by the way, I'm Dave Lefkowitz, hosting Dave's Gone By here. Kind of a different episode than usual, because I'm taking most of the time talking about our trip to Baltimore. And I want to talk about some of the other things that we did there, including the museums that we went to. We had time to go to two, including, of course, the Baltimore Museum of Art, which is this big old thing that reminds me of all the other big city museums, and that's not a bad thing. But it's funny, I was just in the Met about 2 weeks ago, and you really do, in some senses, start to see some things that are quite the same. I mean, they all want to have a few of these Impressionists and a few of these Madonnas and children, and this is lit one way, and then you've got the weird modern kind of room. And I guess that goes for most of the big museums across the country. There is an odd sort of homogeneity, but I will say there was one painting tucked into the Baltimore Museum of Art that kind of caught my attention, and I usually don't like this kind of stuff. It was one of those, you know, Christian Madonna, child, Jesus, priest, saint sort of things out of the Veronese school. And I forgot to take down the painter's name, but it was after Veronese. So someone who came after him, copied him, took his money, whatever they did. And it seems like it's this typical picture of mother holding child, all that. Except if you look even a little bit closely, first of all, Mother Mary has her hand holding her boob. All right, she's about, I guess, to feed and suckle the infant Christ. But now baby Jesus, if you look at him, he's got his little baby hand touching or pulling on his own genitals. And if that isn't weird, I mean, it's very, very prominent where he's got his hand. And I guess it's the artist's way of censoring himself, of blocking, so we don't have to look at, you know, baby pudenda. But at the same time, the way it looks is so odd, and really looks like he's discovering himself at a very, very young age. And meanwhile, in the same painting, Okay, you've got an angel on the lower right who's adoring the baby, but is also, or seems to be, sucking on baby Jesus' toe. And while that is going, okay, so you've got, you know, Mother Mary with a boob, baby Jesus fondling himself, and now the toe sucking of the angel. And in the far lower right, there's Saint Somebody, who's this old priestly man with a beard, looking at this and leering. He's got this face that is not particularly angelic or adoration of magi level. It's more like, oh yeah, pull those penenda. Weird, weird painting. I should have taken the name of it, but it is at the Baltimore Museum of Art, which also has Jeff Koons' bunny that I found really cute. It's just this silver shape of a bunny. But the goofier museum that we went to was the American Visionary Arts Museum. It really is untrained artists, but who really do have a certain level of aesthetic experience and skill. So you have like this giant egg outside the building, and it's made of mosaic glass. It's really cool. And then you've got a mosaic bird next to it. I mean, huge. And these trees outside the museum are all hanging with spangly things and glass and old CDs. And it really is quite... Unfortunately, we didn't see it at night, but it must be something when they shine the lights on it or if the lights move. So that museum has a current exhibit on race and gender issues, and one of the artists who is represented there with a couple of paintings is Rosie O'Donnell, of all people. I mean, she's been sort of off the radar since Broadway producing Taboo and her show, obviously. But she has some serious talent. I mean, she can paint, and she's doing, it's not only pure painting, but collage painting in different textures. Not bad. And one of the nice things also about the museum is that the first person to walk through the front doors of the American Visionary Arts Museum back on opening day in 1995 was a black man, a visionary matchstick artist, they call him. I guess he made these things out of matchsticks. His name was Gerald Hawks, and he observed, sadly, that the letters in the word America could be rearranged to spell I am race. And Gerald then concluded that he much preferred U.S., to America, because U.S. can mean us, all of us, in unity and strength. Kind of nice stuff. And also nice at the museum, they have this other room now, this whole other building, which is a sculpture barn, and in it you see a giant, slowly turning statue of Divine, who is, of course, a Baltimore legend. John Waters shot his early films there, came from there, and used the Baltimore kitsch from the high hairdos to the crazy old women in those early movies. So how appropriate, how wonderful that this kooky museum has this huge statue of Divine that's turning on this little roto thing. And there are also miniature figurines in the museum where you turn a little crank and you watch them move different parts, like jockeys riding horses and cows and sheep going towards their stables. Really neat. And then there was even an exhibit by the late Devon Smith. Now, he was a guy who lived in a trailer, and he collected, towards the end of his life, thousands and thousands of items of what could pleasantly be called junk. I mean, old motors and bits of steel and metal and whatever, and he would then take these things and create these robots with them. Not quite actual working sort of robots, but they'd light up and they'd have signs on them. This is an interesting guy, this Devon Smith. He once took 24 years to slowly, I guess, hitchhike a quarter of a million miles across the United States. And in 1983, he organized a wedding for two of the robots that he built. Really, really cool. I mean, I can't say it's really my thing, but it was kind of nice to see. And also sort of interesting, on the upper floor of the Visionary Arts Museum, there's also this tribute to an artist with serious, serious OCD. And they mention it. He does these line drawings that look like those old spirographs you used to do when you were a kid. His face is made out of all these spiraling lines. And he couldn't have done that work if he didn't have a compulsive disorder. Kind of interesting. Wanted to finish up talking about Baltimore, so I still have time to talk about the August Wilson play. But I do have to mention that the restaurant that we ate in, although we ate in Legal Seafood, which was pretty good, and they had this wood smoke sampler, a very tasty way of doing the fish there, and the delicious sugar-free chocolate mousse cake that was started out a little bit bitter, but then, you know, as you compulsively eat it with a sip of coffee, it's like, ooh, this is kind of good. And it was pretty good until the waiter accidentally spilled coffee on my wife, but that's another story. We also ate at the Rusty Scupper, of legendary note. It's a big, big sign that you can see all the way across the harbor for this restaurant, the Rusty Scupper. And there's only two of them. There's one in, I think, New Haven, Connecticut, and there's one in Baltimore's Inner Harbor. And what struck me about it is, first of all, who the hell would name a restaurant something as disgusting as Rusty Scupper? I mean, it almost sounds like a venereal disease that sea captains have to get treated. And even when you hear what it really means, it isn't particularly pleasant. The definition of a scupper is a hole or a drainage opening that allows water to run off in a ship. So if you get this big rainstorm or it dips a little bit, the water has a place to go. It also has, in English parlance, as a verb, to scupper something is either to massacre, to ruin or destroy it, or to flee from it. So how someone would name a seafood restaurant the Rusty Scupper, I don't know. It's got great views and really good food. It was a really nice place to have lunch. I had a local delicacy there, or local fish there, called rockfish. That was really nice. And my wife had chicken breast on salad. Not that you need to know that or that you care, but I just love saying the words Rusty Scupper. Be right back with my review of August Wilson's Radio Golf.
They say the neon lights are bright on Broadway, and you can see them shine off Broadway too. And if you love the theater scene, you need this special magazine. Performing Arts Insider is for you. Everything you want to know about theater, cabaret, opera, and dance. 516-295-1511. 516-295-1511 or performingartsinsider.com.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By, talking about my trip to Baltimore, and I didn't want to let that pass without mentioning the fact that I did go to see some theater there. In fact, the reason we were there was because we were invited by the folks at Center Stage, which was staging not quite the world premiere, but certainly early in the process version of August Wilson's very last play, Radio Golf, which will be coming in some form or other to Broadway next year. So I did want to catch it. It's directed by Kenny Leon and features some of the usual people who've been in Wilson's plays over the years, like Rocky Carroll and Anthony Chisholm and John Earl Jelks. And it's a modern piece, so it's got a little more energy and a little more oomph and gets right into it than some of Wilson's other talkier works that are set in other decades. And it's basically about this guy who's part of a redevelopment plan for this really awful, blighted minority area of Pittsburgh. And he's just praying and hoping that the whole community will be declared a blight so they can knock it down, build up these big old, you know, shopping areas and good middle-class and upper-class living places, and that would really help his chances for mayor. Only problem is there's this one man who has a house right in the middle of that blighted, awful area. He hasn't paid taxes on it, but it is apparently his, and he's got to give the okay to have his house knocked down, and he's not about to do it. There's your conflict, and it is more than enough. It really is enough for a 2.5-hour piece, and I'll say more about it, I guess, when it gets to Broadway, but it's good Wilson. The main thing that I was thinking about watching the play, apart from what was going on in the play, was realizing just what a loss it was when Wilson left. I mean, we can be thrilled that he completed those 10 plays, but he was relatively young, and the way that he could write and draw people and draw you in, it just makes you wonder if he had lived another 5 years, another 10 years, and written another 5 to 10 plays, what we would have gotten from him. Really, really, that, more than anything else, made me sad, apart from the fact that, you know, he went out on a really good note. This is a good play, a little talky, and there's a love story in there that seems sort of grafted on and a bit forced, but good stuff at Center Stage Radio Golf, and look for it when it comes to New York. Wow. Well, there's my basic bowler overview. I've got some music and other stuff to do as well, so come on back.
Sponsor me, Dave's Gone By. Run your ad, folks will buy. If you want to reach the public, sponsor me.
Advertise on this program for incredibly reasonable rates with long-term discounts. See prices at davesgoneby.org or call 516-295-1511.
Sponsor me. If you're wise on Dave's Gone By, you'll advertise. If you want to be successful, sponsor me.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on this April 2nd. I want to take just a minute or two to say farewell to a musician, a fellow named Nicky Sudden. Actually, his real name was Nicholas Godfrey, but he went under the name Nicky Sudden, and he died a couple of days ago. He was only 49 years old. They're not releasing the reasons or the cause of death, and it doesn't seem like it would have been either foul play or the drug stuff. It seems like at an age when he would have been well beyond those years, although I'm sure he indulged back when, because he was part of the 1970s glam scene, and then he went into punk rock, and then he was more into sort of the eccentric folk rock blues sort of stuff that Robin Hitchcock type would have done, or Sexton Ming. And the interesting thing about Nicky Sudden for me is I have only known about him from one song for a whole long time, and it's only since his death notice that I went to his website, NickySudden.com, and that's N-I-K-K-I, Sudden, like the word Sudden, NickySudden.com, and they have a bunch of downloads there from different periods in his career, so you can hear the different types of music that he did. But the one song that I knew about for a long time was from a tribute album that CD companies put together to honor a particular musician with a legacy. This one was to Neil Young, and the album called A Tribute to Neil Young on Caroline Records. And some of the folks on the CD included Bongwater and Henry Kaiser, Soul Asylum is on there, Victoria Williams, Nick Cave does his version of Helpless on the CD. And then there was someone I had never heard of, Nicky Sudden, playing with a band called The French Revolution, doing a rather little-known song by Neil Young called Captain Kennedy. That happens to be on the Hawks and Doves record. Now, Neil Young's version, it's so quiet, you don't even know it's there. It kind of gets lost on the Hawks and Doves album. Let's hear a little bit of Captain Kennedy, the original version from Neil Young. Neil Young doing his Captain Kennedy, and now here's the version by Nicky Sudden. And the interesting thing that I always found about him is that he seems to have the absolute worst, most weird and ridiculous voice for a singer in the rock, folk, pop idiom. And just first time I heard it, I was like, oh my God, this is unlistenable. But then I heard him play that guitar, and the clarity and the purity of the sound that Nicky Sudden got from his guitar and his guitar solos on this song just wiped me out. I think it's fantastic. So here is Captain Kennedy, the Nicky Sudden version, in his honor.
father was a sailor, name of Captain Kennedy. Lost his wooden schooner to the Germans on the sea. Exploded on the water for everyone to see and humiliate that America. Oh, Captain Kennedy. Worked till his fingers, well, they wore right to the bone, to buy that wooden schooner and sail on his own. He was known in the island as Hundred Foot Iron. That steel hull freighter was passing its time. One time flew by faster with life on the sea, and the days they grew shorter. The captain, oh Captain Kennedy.
Sudden, taken from us suddenly. Thanks, man, for the music and for that guitar. And thank all of you for listening to this Dave's Gone By episode. Thanks so much to Engineer Tom. Thanks very much to Aaron Heisman of Center Stage in Baltimore, and to all the cool people, including old Jerry at the Visitor Center. Thanks for your help. And thanks to my wonderful and lovely wife, Joyce, and to my folks, and to everyone who's helped this show in the past week, including the sponsors, Hewlett Minuteman Press, MortgagesRock.com, and Performing Arts Insider Theater Magazine. We're going to go out with a little more music, Frank Zappa, with a song called What's New in Baltimore. We'll be back in a week at this time with a brand new episode of Dave's Gone By. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz. Good night, Rusty Scupper, and Gone By.